Welcome back to Integrative Lyme Solutions with Dr. Karlfeldt. I am so excited about the show that we have ahead of us. We have some phenomenal information that could save lives. I am Dr. Michael Karlfeldt, and with me I have my co-host,
Tanya Hobo.
You're going to need to tune in to what's going on today. The information is jam-packed, so don't step away.
So excited. Let's go ahead and get this started.
I'm here to show today.
Yes, I'm excited to be here. Thank you very much.
Well, thanks
I hope I can share some information that's useful to people.
I have no doubt that and anyone's journey and what we've seen is it's so unique, and each one brings so much great information that just kind of inspires and empowers people to be able to push through as they're diagnosed and go through it.
Definitely. I've found in my own journey, my healing really took off when I started joining support groups and going to conferences and realizing that this crazy journey I had been on for 26 years was not unique at all. In fact, so many people's journeys sounded very similar to mine. And that just really was a comfort, because you can feel so isolated when you're grappling with something like that and the doctors don't understand and friends and family are at a loss. I think having a community around you can really make the journey easier.
Absolutely. So let's start. I know you kind of have two stories almost, so to say. So we'll let you kind of start where you want to from the first go around, I guess we would call it.
And this is for 26 years.
Yeah. 26 years.
You barely look 26.
I'm 38. I started really young with Lyme disease. I was 12 when the symptoms started. I live in Eastern Missouri, and we lived in the country, and we're very outdoorsy family. So my mom and I horseback rode regularly. We had a horse. I would go hiking with my dog. We lived next to a big creek, and it was all wooded along the creek. Beautiful, very tick infested though. Which, looking back, it's like, gee, no doctor ever asked if I was exposed to ticks. I mean, between my dog, my cat, my horse, and myself, I probably picked thousands of ticks off of us over the years that we lived there. So my exposure was like really high, like a conservationist working in a park.
It's fascinating. I mean, as doctors, you know, that they when the exposure is that much, you live in that kind of environment, that they're not even looking in that direction. I mean, it's such an obvious thing, you would think.
Yes, you would think. And even my parents were aware of Lyme disease, and they told me this was the mid-90s, so they gave me what they had, and which was, if you get bit by one of these ticks, because they knew I was going to get bit, because we were all getting bit. But they're like, if you feel sick, within a couple of weeks after a tick bite, you got to let us know, so we can take you to the doctor. But unfortunately, in my case, it was a very slow progression. So I don't know if the tick just didn't have a lot of the spirochetes in it, because over the next year, I slowly developed a lot of the classical symptoms. And I remember the bite that grossed me out the most, because usually I got them right away. I did a full body check whenever I came inside. I was kind of taught to do all the things, right? And there was one right on the base of my skull in my hair. And I woke up because it itched, and I felt it fully engorged. I knew exactly what it was. I was like, oh no, this is so gross. So I, pick it off, flush it down the toilet. And I did think about, okay, how am I going to feel next couple of days? Nothing happened. And as far as I could see, I didn't have a rash even. But within a year, I was a completely different person. By the time I was 13, I had a lot of the brain symptoms, depression, brain fog. My mood was up and down to where my mom was like, we need to take you to a psychiatrist. Like, what are we dealing with here? This is like not you. And we ended up with a neurologist who thought it was ADHD, but then I started having a lot of pain and dysfunction in my knees to where they were completely unstable. I'd be walking down the hall to class and my knees would just buckle and I'd go down. And so I learned to like kind of hug the wall so I could catch myself when it would happen. So of course my parents take me to the doctor, like what's going on? And I also have lower back pain. And it's like every symptom got a different doctor. That's just kind of how the system's set up. Mm-hmm. And every doctor gave it a different diagnosis. Nobody ever put the whole picture together. And luckily, the neurologist put me on a very high dose of Concerta, the time-release Ritalin. And that gave me enough energy because I did have the chronic fatigue. There were days where I would sleep 1 or 2 days straight. Yeah. And the brain fog was definitely interfering with school. And although I did get a free pass to not run in gym class, I kind of liked that part, but, the Concerta was, in a way a blessing because it cut through the fog on most days. And I was on like the highest dose that they could prescribe for my age. But I really needed it and it really did help. And I think because I started out young and healthy, by the time I was about 14, I was pretty much fighting the Lyme back on my own because with the help of the stimulant, I just kept going. I was an active athletic kid. I was busy. I had things to do. We ate well at home. My parents were big on like nutrition and vitamins, very active people. So that just all kind of worked in my favor. And I learned through trial and error through my teens and my 20s, not knowing I had something, but not knowing exactly what it was, that I had to really keep my work-life balance in check. I had to keep my stress low. I had to make sure to eat right and exercise regularly. And certain exercise worked better for me than others. Distance hiking worked actually the best, as did distance horseback riding. Weightlifting, and this just might be me, but weightlifting actually kind of wore me out and made me feel not so great. So it was just little things, just little tweaks. I started trying different supplements to kind of replace the Concerta because it's hard on the liver and I really wanted to get off of it. It also interfered with my sleep, which if you have Lyme, you don't really sleep that well. Yeah, it's important. Right. And sleep was another one. I had to make sure to get enough sleep. And if I felt tired at 7, I just went to bed at 7. And
that's amazing. That's amazing as a 13-year-old, 14-year-old, you know, to be able to be that methodical about it and kind of find solutions and figure out what works, doesn't work, and also have the desire to get off the pharmaceuticals. I mean, it might be just kind of the background with your family that are more naturally minded.
Yeah, that definitely, I think probably made the difference.
What you didn't know you had Lyme at this point, what were the diagnosis? What were they telling you was wrong?
So they were all over the place. So the neurologist thought I had ADHD, of course. And back in the 90s, that was a very popular diagnosis. Mm-hmm. And I saw a physical therapist I know, and he didn't have an idea of why I had lower back pain, but I also, I think, saw an what's the bone doctors call forgive me, I'm like thinking osteopath. Is that right?
Chiropractor, osteopath.
So he thought I had Osgood Schlatter, which is mostly common in male adolescents who are athletes and who are going to be very tall. And though I was athletic, I was like, but I'm female and I'm really short. So, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so, but the key with that one that I sort of was kind of made me not believe in that diagnosis was they said that I would grow out of the knee dysfunction and that by the time I was about 18, 19 and done growing, I'd be able to run again. And that didn't happen. I had no bounce. That was sort of a strange symptom because, and now I understand, of course, my collagen was compromised. But like I couldn't jump. I had been a gymnast as a kid. So I was like, this is really strange. Why can't I jump anymore?
you had no Tigger in you, huh?
No. Zero. I was like glued to the ground no matter what I did. I fucked. it wasn't until I was 31 that, I had kind of been going downhill a little bit in my late 20s
So to 14, you said you started to fight it back and you started to win and kind of your youth was kind of, and you were taking care of yourself well. So 15 through, late 20s, you were doing pretty okay.
And there were occasional flare ups. If I kind of let my guard down on diet, exercise, and stress management, I'd feel it. But I knew what to do to get it back. And I had so much momentum at that time that it was easy to always get it back. So I kind of wasn't afraid of whatever that mystery thing was, because I felt like I had a really good handle on it. And so in my late 20s, I was in grad school already, and I decided to do two back-to-back masters to prepare for being a college professor. So, and at that time is also the recession. So my husband and I, being still fairly young, we weren't able to really make a ton of money either. So I was working full time and I was in grad school full time. And that didn't leave a lot of time to take care of me.
I was going to say, that's a lot. Yeah.
And I knew, I was like, but I kept telling myself, well, this is just temporary. I'm on the accelerated program with my degree. And then I'll be able to get back into my routine and all will be well. And then I, because you can tell I'm a little bit of a go-getter. So, and I like a full plate. And after I finish the first master's, my husband gets a promotion. I'm going to be 30, and we're like, hey, this could be a really good time to have kids.
So you want to do your second master's and kids, huh?
Exactly. That's what I did. I had kid number one, and that went pretty well. And I bounced back really, really nicely afterwards, and finishing the second master's in creative writing with kid number two, and that one wasn't going so well. I really probably in the first trimester noticed that I was just dragging, and a lot of the joint dysfunction, especially in my knees, that I had been able to kind of allowed to heal. I did take a lot of joint supplements in my 20s to kind of heal that damage so I could be as active as I wanted to. And I would be going down the stairs with my second pregnancy and my knees were just like wobbling. I was losing the stability and they were starting to crackle and I could kind of feel the shearing and I was like, this isn't good. And I'm like, what is going on? I'm like, okay, well, I didn't have this with my first pregnancy and I'm actually less heavy than I was with my son. My son like had me craving carbs, so I gained a ton of weight. My daughter thankfully was like lean meats and vegetables. I was like, thanks, kid. So I was like, it's not the, you know, what is it? It was a mystery. And I started having a lot more of the fatigue and the brain fog, and some of the pain started to come back. So I had some general pain before, you know, kind of that musculoskeletal sort of pain early on with the Lyme. And now it's kind of all back. You know, I'm kind of 13 again with my second pregnancy. So I have her and I'm like, okay, well, I'm going to have to really figure this out and get well. And about 2 weeks after delivery, at the time I thought I had like the worst virus ever. It's hard to kind of explain it, but I've heard a couple other people describe the exact same symptoms at the onset of neuroborreliosis, which was severe flu-like symptoms and nausea, weakness, trembling, lot of trembling, just muscle twitches everywhere to where I was like kind of convulsing. And I lost the ability to regulate my temperature. I had a fever spike. I think my fever at a point was up to 104, and I felt like I was outside in a blizzard in like, you know, a t-shirt. I was just freezing. So I had three layers of like hoodies on and sweatpants and my winter wool hiking socks, and my husband's throwing all the blankets on me like, we need to take you to the hospital. I'm like, I've got a 2-week-old baby.
Yeah,
she's
I don't have time for that.
Exactly.
Right. Such a strong mother instinct, just like would not let me go. And I really needed to go. It probably wouldn't have done much, but yeah, it was, it felt risky though to stay. And I told my husband, look, if I can just, and, I mean, he had to help me to the bathroom also. I was very weak. And I was like, if I can make it through the night,
I'll see if I have time to go in the morning.
Exactly. I'll schedule it between 11:15 and 11:30 tomorrow. I got an opening then.
Like, I don't have time for this. Like, it'll blow. It's like, this storm will blow over. That was my mentality. And it did. The next day I was much better. I was able to like get up and go to the bathroom by myself. My fever broke and I'm like, okay, the virus is done with me and I'm going to get better now. And I didn't. That next day, how I felt, the function I was left with, I was stuck with that. So go to the doctor and they're like, you know, is it Guillain-Barre? What's going on? And finally, my primary, what I'd actually seen when I had been a teenager, she's like, I think you should see this Lyme specialist. I've got a couple other patients that see him and have gotten a lot of help, and all of your symptoms together, I think you need to consult with him and see. And sure enough, just my symptoms alone, he was certain, especially because he took into account my history.
Right.
And I did get the Western blot, and I know he sent it to, I think, a lab in California. He said there was only a couple of labs where a technician will actually look at it. They don't run it through a computer, which will miss a lot, but they have actual human eyes.
Igenics?
Maybe. It was a while. I go back through my records. I'm not entirely certain. But I did have some positive bands. And not many, just a couple, I think. But it was enough. And he was like, well, you know, it's an old infection. So he's like, that's not uncommon to have a weak positive. So he started me on the the antibiotics. And at the time I did not take doxy because I really wanted to breastfeed my daughter. And also we knew for sure I had Lyme as I was pregnant with her. So my doctor was really wonderful in that he was like, we're going to treat you both. So you're going to treat her through
breast milk.
Yes. So that's what we did. And knock on wood, neither of my kids have any symptoms. I feel wonderful. You know, wonderful, but yes, I'm very grateful that so far they seem okay. And
so how did it treat both of you? So was it just the antibiotics that he did and he felt that that was enough, or did he do anything else?
No, he pretty much, and he'd been at it a while. I think he's been treating since maybe the late 80s. I know he knew Dr. Masters, who discovered the strain for Missouri, that's native here. So he did really know a lot, but yeah, he still pretty much uses the antibiotics, and he does a lot of endocrine support, a lot with supplements to kind of make sure your body has enough support. And at that time, I pretty much did just need the antibiotics and detox. I think I mostly used the activated charcoal. Okay. Or detox. And it took about 18 months to get into remission. And, but I really had 2016, 2017 were really, really good years, to the point where I was able to work part-time as an editor, to put my kids through preschool, which was awesome. And also kind of led me to my big mistake, which was private practice doctor plus two kids in preschool was a bit of a financial strain. So I dropped the doctor. Like, I don't even have time to go. Right? I'm like, you know, on death's door. So
pick and anyway. Choose, right? Your kids, your health, your
some way you got to keep your kids, right?
But in a way it was dumb, because I actually got really, really bad within about a year. The remission didn't last. By 2018, I was already starting to feel a little bit yucky. And I got stuck in the trap that I think maybe a lot of people post-treatment gets, which is the antibiotics worked. They got rid of your infection. Your body developed an autoimmune disease. So I chased that for about 2 years, and it was honestly hell. I lost all function. I could not maintain my job, my relationships. At a point, I was spending more time in bed than not. I was having days where a good day was I could get up and make a sandwich or take a shower. Sometimes I just could do one. I couldn't even do both.
Right.
And that was just really a harrowing experience, because, you know, I've got these little kids and I'm like, why can't they figure this out? I went to St. Louis University. I went to all the big hospitals. I went to all sorts of specialists. I even saw the head of infectious disease at SLU, who diagnosed me with chronic fatigue. Thanks.
Yeah, exactly. That you got to get a lot of degrees to figure that one out.
Yeah.
Yeah. Can't get out of bed. Yeah.
Oh, I collected a lot of misdiagnoses. I got diagnosed with fibromyalgia, of course.
Right. Like, that's the number one almost always.
Who with Lyme disease doesn't have a fibro diagnosis? They were sure it was MS, but my brain scans kept coming up clean. And I've had 4 MRIs, and they were clean every time. And I'm kind of grateful that my neurologist here in St. Louis really hesitated to put me on any of the immunosuppressant drugs for MS. And he never really would discuss my previous diagnosis of Lyme disease. So I could never really tell where he stood on that. But my hunch was that he wasn't really on board with that. But he wasn't the most open doctor. You know, a lot of doctors are kind of that way. They don't really want to have a dialogue with their patient. They're kind of like, you know, this is what I think. Here's your script. Okay. Bye-bye. You know, it's just such a brief encounter. It's hard to get anywhere when you have got a complicated situation.
So they didn't, even though you had responded to antibiotics in the past that would relate mm-hmm. to the infection, they still didn't consider that diagnosis as still being something that's impacting you now.
Correct. Even when in 2020, by summer of 2020, I was pretty much in crisis. I had worked really hard to get off all the antidepressants and antileptics that they had put me on to deal with the neuropathy that I had, that I still had post-treatment. It also caused me to gain 70 pounds, and that was not doing my joints any favor. Right. So weak that my collagen was compromised to the point where I couldn't lift anything that was over 10 pounds without, I could actually feel my joints separating. And so that actually, I almost saw an Ehlers Danlos specialist. But by 2020, I was so desperate because I'd worked so hard to try to regain ground, and I was stuck in bed again for like 6 weeks. And so I just reached my hand up and I'm like, God, just show me the steps to take to get my health back. And I could feel the presence of the Holy Spirit all around me. And I could just, it was almost like a wind that would just kind of push me in certain directions. And I would pray over every bit of research, every appointment I was about to make. I ended up not going to the Ehlers-Danlos specialist, and instead ended up at Mayo Clinic in Rochester, October of last year. So just a year ago. And they did a full autonomic nervous system and autoimmune workup. And everything came back clean, except my small fiber nerves were damaged. And so I'd also picked up a POTS diagnosis, and I did have all the symptoms of POTS, but you know, nobody's so unlucky that they have all the symptoms of like IBS and SI joint dysfunction and POTS and Ehlers-Danlos and migraine. You know, you put it all together and it's a portrait of a really bad case of Lyme disease. Right. And nobody ever, even Mayo Clinic, didn't put it all together. But they did say, well, we think that your small fiber nerve damage was caused by the Lyme disease. And I'm like, well, that was years ago that I was treated for that. So I think that means it came back. But I really am glad I went, even though they didn't treat the Lyme disease, even though they didn't ever mention that, oh, it probably came back. And I realized that they don't deal with chronic Lyme disease at Mayo, but they did do me a real favor in pushing all of those misdiagnoses out of my head. And I ended up back with my Lyme specialist. And I realized even then though, that I'd have to do things a little bit differently because it came back. And he thought it came back. He confirmed that. He's like, oh yeah. He's like, and he didn't say so, but I could see in his face, I wish you had come back sooner. Why go through all of that? I'm like, I was confused. I was so confused.
I had Lyme brain.
Yes.
Don't blame me.
Yes. Oh, definitely. Right. You're confused anyway. And I mean, I had all the symptoms of the meningitis and the vasculitis with it. I couldn't think straight at a point. It was so bad. I couldn't even communicate with my family about what was going on. They're like, why are you in bed? And I'm like, I don't know. You know, I just couldn't even get the words out.
And here you have a master's in creative writing.
Exactly. And writing. Like, I should be able to communicate. And I couldn't. I really couldn't. I couldn't research anymore. I was just really stuck. And but I ended up getting through it. And I should back up for a minute and mention that one of the biggest breakthroughs actually happened in 2019, which was that I started having very intense itching to where I couldn't sleep for hours until I was just so exhausted from like itching and twitching in bed all night. And I started having a lot of food intolerance, and that was brand new. And so I had some Benadryl on hand actually for a family member. And so after it was the second night of itching for hours, I was like, I've got Benadryl. So I get up and I take two and I go to sleep and I wake up and the brain fog is like cut in half. And I'm like, whoa, this is something. And I get my brain back just enough to go online and research and figure out that my symptoms fit mast cell activation syndrome. And I attribute that to the Lyme because I didn't have it before. And since I've been in remission, it's pretty much gone. So that was a huge breakthrough because then I was really able to think again.
Right. It's hard to do anything when your brain isn't functioning properly.
It is. Yeah. You become trapped in a cage, and it's awful because you can't communicate, you can't figure out how to get out. And if your brain would just work right, maybe you could help your body.
Right. Exactly.
But you can't do one without the other. So that was a real blessing in a way. all that itchiness. So when I went back to the specialist, I decided to do things a little bit differently. And so I joined support groups because I wanted to hear what everybody else was doing. What are all the other clinics doing? Because they're on their own. So they're going to come up with novel solutions. And I also attended a conference, the Truth About Lyme conference, that was online last February. And I was already starting the antibiotics and not tolerating them. Like I did before, I had zero problems with the antibiotics the first time around. I mean, 18 months even, I still tolerated them very well. I think this time around, my body was so weak. I was just so sick and worn down that little bit of toxin that is the antibiotic, my body just rejected it. It's just like, no, even injections. I tried injections to try to bypass my stomach and whatever was in there came out. I just was so sick on it, and it wasn't perks. It was different. It was immediately, as soon as it hit my system, my body was just like, no. I was like, okay, well, I got to learn something else. And so I decided to learn herbs because I was curious anyway. I was interested in ancient medicine for a long time anyway, and I'm glad I did. I ended up making my own protocol based on everything I learned through research and through especially that conference, and I ended up taking a pretty robust protocol. I kind of call it like everything but the kitchen sink protocol, which is where I took 17 herbs. Although the cistus tea, I waited until I was through the first wave of herks with all the other herbs, because I knew when it started busting through that biofilm, and I knew I had it after about many years,
right.
It's probably it came back. So I gave that one a little bit of time. And then also lime essential oils that I had learned about, that Johns Hopkins had been experimenting with. And I think that was the real key, because I when I got better, I did also add in some of the minocycline that I had been prescribed, and I was able to tolerate it. I was already, after about 4 to 6 weeks, strong enough to tolerate some antibiotics, but I went low and slow because I felt like I didn't really need them. And, but you know, they kind of seemed to speed things along. I felt fine kind of either way, whether I took them or whether I didn't. So it was more of a good measure, that I took the antibiotics. But the essential oils, I think, were actually the key, because it was only about 4 months that I was on this new herbal regimen that I was in remission. And I knew from the conference, the physicians who treat with herbs said on average, it takes 2 years. And of course I'm sitting here comparing it to my first time around with antibiotics, which was 18 months. And I'm thinking, well, that's not a big difference. And I can avoid all of the gastrointestinal issues. Plus, I can take herbs to maintain remission. That's a big bonus. You know, whereas you can't really take antibiotics with a lot of side effects. But adding the essential oils, which I mostly used topically on my joints, I think helped really dry the lime out of my joints so it couldn't hide there. Because as I'm kind of studying anatomy and I'm like, okay, everything that I'm taking orally or as an injection, it's going through my bloodstream, but there's not a lot of blood in the joints. But the essential oils, they don't need the bloodstream. They just soak through the tissues. And so I think that's how I was able to cut my time down. And I'd love to like find other people who've tried this, and I haven't found anybody yet, I guess, cause it's new and I can't tell you. Tell me if you've heard of any clinical trials with the essential oils, because I haven't found any yet. It seems like it was all in the lab.
Yeah, I haven't seen with essential oils. I mean, you have, what's his name? One of my radio show interviews I did, he's probably one of the leaders in the world in regards to essential oils. I mean, he would probably be the one that would know. And so what I would do is go on my website, thecarlfieldcenter.com, and just type in essential oils or aroma, probably aromatherapy. Darn it, I can't remember his name. But and I would listen to that one. It was a great interview. And then I would just reach out to him. He has his finger on pretty much all the different research when it comes to essential oils.
Excellent. Yeah, definitely.
I know that the last few years, a lot of people have turned to essential oils and they've helped with numerous things. So that doesn't surprise me to hear that it really helped you.
So I'm curious, what kind of essential oils did you use and what kind of herbs did you, everything about the kitchen sink? I mean, what did that look like? You know, because I'm curious.
Yeah, absolutely. So I actually have it pulled up here because I kind of have to look. I don't really remember it off the top of my head super well. Like I said, I started with the herbs, and that was pretty well tolerated as far as how sick I was. So, and I tailored them to the fact that I had neuroborreliosis and that I had POTS symptoms. So some of the herbs that are popular with other clinics but would aggravate POTS, for instance, I avoided those. You know, if it would open the blood vessels, because something that I took to kind of control the POTS was Sudafed. Sudafed PE, actually, because it doesn't just constrict blood vessels in your nose, it constricts all of them. So that was a big help. So I didn't want to counter that because I definitely wanted to be active as soon as possible. So you want me to just read the list?
Sure,
I can.
I would love to. And just kind of if you kind of give a couple of comments as to the reasoning.
Sure. So like I said, it was tailored for the neuroborreliosis in particular and avoiding aggravating the POTS symptoms. And also like there was one, I think it was, hold on, there was one that I didn't take that's really used a lot. It's, I have a little note, Andrographis. I heard that can be difficult to tolerate. And so I decided to see where I could get with pretty much all the rest of them. So I took Otoba. I'll use the Latin name so people want to, you know, look it up, you know, versus trying to use the common name. So Otoba, Uncaria tomentosa, Seta acuta, Coptis, Echinacea, Cordyceps is a big one even for maintaining remission, I found. Salvia, Uncaria, Rhynchophila, which was a little bit more useful than the other Uncaria for neuroborreliosis. Something I learned from the other clinicians. Polygonum cuspidatum, Scutellaria, Bicalensis, which is also a great antiviral. So that was, adding other antivirals as I started learning about herbal medicine was huge because my immune system was so weak. I caught everything. I'd go to the store, I'd catch something. My kids would come home from school, I'd catch something. It was like a revolving door of viruses with me. And then it would cause a revolving door of sinus infections and pneumonia. And it was just
a vicious cycle.
I started really relying heavily on herbal antivirals as well. And they work. Not on every virus. It's kind of a guess which virus you've got sometimes. We got something over the summer that I suspect was RSV, but you know, if it wasn't COVID, they didn't really care. Even though we got hurt. I have. They're like, well, it's not COVID, so go home. Yeah. Like, wait.
I'm still sick.
I need to know. But as far as like colds and flus go, they actually do really, really help to keep them more mild. Artemisa annuus was another one, and grapefruit seed extract. And modified citrus pectin is another one that I found to be invaluable for any stage because it detoxifies, it helps the immune system, it's antimicrobial, it's anti-inflammatory. It's just kind of like just a good catch-all. I do try to take it not too close to any of the others because anything that can act as a binder, well, I don't want it to bind with my herbals. You know?
Right.
And then I also started using Simambia, hopefully I'm saying that right, because it's neuroprotective. But that one wasn't actually on the Lyme list. That one I kind of found on my own, but it has some anti-cancer properties and, you know, it was just kind of a bonus. And it's a natural sunscreen that works from the inside. So that was kind of good when I was taking minocycline a little bit through the summer so that I didn't sunburn so bad. And then the cistus incanus, the cistus tea is wonderful. And it's another one kind of like the modified citrus pectin that just does so much. It's antiviral, antimicrobial. Most importantly for Lyme disease, it breaks up biofilm. And I waited 6 weeks to start taking that one. So I took all the other herbs for 6 weeks before I added in the cistus because I had a feeling once I took that and it started breaking the biofilm, I would really get a lot of herks. And I didn't want to double up on my herks.
Right.
So
that was smart.
Yes. I timed most of it pretty well. But it was also my second time around. And I, you know, of course I herxed on the antibiotics. And so I would go low and slow with those when need be, or switch them up when need be, the first time around. So I knew to apply that to taking the herbs as well. And it worked out pretty well. And then of course, detox. So Desmodium was an herb that I took for detox, the modified citrus pectin detox as well. Chlorella, broken cell wall chlorella, and cilantro, just kind of pull stuff out. I eventually did some heavy metal testing because I was sort of curious if maybe, you know, growing up in St. Louis, which has a lot of lead, there were lead smelters in St. Louis, as well as, of course, all old cities used lead paint back in the day to some extent. So I wondered if maybe that's why my nerves did not recover as quickly with my first remission. And it turned out my lead levels were definitely higher than they should be. Not skyrocket high, but definitely I had been exposed, probably living in St. Louis. So I made sure that I kept doing the cilantro, the chlorella, added bentonite clay. You know, Missouri's kind of moldy. Currently I'm doing DMSA to help pull out those metals, and I am feeling a little bit better on that. So it's working. It's a good one. Any side effects? So and another one I found not a lot of people, at least in the support groups, a lot of people that I've worked with don't do self-lymphatic massage.
Yes.
I have found that is huge. That can turn my whole day around. And I combine it with the Epsom salt bath. So I'll soak in the warm Epsom salt bath, not too hot because, you know, the pots go too hot. Hot's good if you don't have pots, because hot also can kill off the bacteria, the infection. But if you have pots, it can make you feel like you're going to pass out. So.
Yeah, you don't want to do that in the bathtub.
No, I have actually come really close, and it was not fun. My husband had to pull me out. I was like, and he, of course, he's like, I don't understand. You were just taking a bath. What's wrong with you? So, yeah, don't recommend that if you get dizzy easily with, you know, and that just kind of comes with the small nerve damage that can happen. Oops, sorry about that, guys. With the Lyme disease. So
how did you, I mean, this combination of things, that was mostly from the different groups, or did you have like, you know, Lee Cowden or Stephen Buhner, or did you?
I looked at a lot of those. So I had already made my protocol based on a couple of presentations. I don't know if you want me to mention them. I know sometimes we have to be careful who we mention, since Lyme physicians put themselves at risk, unfortunately, treating Lyme patients. Two of the presentations at the conference were very in-depth on what herbs have worked for their patients, and to where they, you know, they would explain, like, this is what this herb blocks. This herb kills persister cells and active Lyme cells. This herb breaks up biofilm. This herb boosts your natural killer cells. So things like that, I made sure that I took very detailed notes on, so that I could be like, okay, this for sure I need. And so I ended up combining from two clinics, and then I kind of did compare it to Buhner. I knew that he's kind of the foundation for a lot of clinicians that use herbs. A lot of the herbs in his protocol block the Lyme, which is a huge part of it, I think. I think if you're just killing it, or if you're not getting after the biofilm, you know, I mean, it's just kind of like one of those enemies you have to hit from all sides.
There's so many parts of it that you can't do one without the other. Exactly. Yeah.
And I think that's where the essential oils played a big part too, making sure that I was really driving it out of my joints in a way that all the oral medications, herbal or prescription, couldn't do. And of the herbs that, or I'm sorry, of the oils that were in the research, I tried almost all of them. I think spiked ginger lily, I couldn't find. And allspice, I'm very allergic to, so I didn't try that one. But myrrh and mei chang worked amazingly well. And I actually tried those a year prior to starting all of the other herbs because I was already suspecting maybe the Lyme had come back. And since I was already familiar with using using essential oils, I thought, well, this is a really easy thing to just try right. to see, will it help my joints feel better? And it did. And I would add other healing joints like frankincense, lavender, lemon, I read was good for collagen. I'm actually currently looking into see if any of the research, there's been a lot of research on lemon essential oil. And I'm curious to see if anyone's done any specific research on lemon and biofilms. I haven't found it yet. Maybe it's out there, which would be, you know, really cool. Because I added the lemon in later. And when I did, my joints are almost back to normal now.
Really?
Yes. So that's why I'm looking, because I want to see.
Have you tried like prolozone injections? Those type of things into the joints?
I was encouraged to by my Lyme specialist to get the Prolo injections. And
so it's different between Prolo versus prolozone.
Oh, okay. Well, maybe not then. What's the difference? I don't know that I know that.
So Prolo, then you kind of damage a tissue in a way to stimulate regeneration. Prolozone, then you bring ozone into the tissue, you know, to oxygenate the tissue, reduce inflammation, kill off pathogens, stimulate migration of stem cells and other growth factors to that location.
Yeah. I did actually consider doing things like that. I wanted to see how far I could get with the rest. And also taking a good joint supplement that had, so I have horses and I've healed sport injuries with horses because you can't really do a lot of invasive stuff. They don't tolerate it as well as we do. So, joint supplements I found that have glucosamine, chondroitin, MSM, and hyaluronic acid in good quantity. Some of them kind of skimp on that, sort of the magic ingredient. And I'm like, well, if it works on them, we'll see if it works on me. Of course, you got to get the Lyme under control. Otherwise, the damage is just continuing. But I never kind of got around to trying those other therapies since everything just kind of came together.
Me too. Yeah.
It sounds like you're kind of doing your mad science experiments and you don't want to mess up the control and the...
So your journey... pretty much brought you to, well, a couple of things. You came up with your own protocol, and also you're in the process of writing a book, which is very exciting. So where can we find your protocol at? Do you have a website or tell us about that?
Yeah. Currently, I do not have my website up and running quite yet. However, I do a lot of mentoring, primarily through Facebook pages. And I'm also open to people messaging me through Facebook Messenger. And usually through there, I share my protocol. Since it's fairly large, it's kind of hard to like share it on the online platforms.
Right.
And so I usually tell people, like, if you're curious, if you want to compare it to what you've already tried or compare it to some other protocols, I'm happy to share it because it's what worked for me. It might not work for everyone with every co-infection. My Lyme specialist suspected I had Babesia, and I've taken several pharmaceuticals for that the first time around and the second time around. And they seemed to work on those symptoms fairly well. It was more the Borrelia symptoms that I really, really struggled with. But the herbal protocol did a really good job with.
So how would somebody find you?
I'm on Facebook, Christine Joan Emerson. I'm in Missouri, so you can kind of look me up that way. I'm also a member of Lyme Conquerors Mentoring Lyme Warriors.
Great.
It's one of my favorites. So Always a very positive place. That is one thing. The support groups are great, but they don't always stay positive. Sometimes people get really weighed down, and I totally understand that. But for anyone who's out there, who's new, who's looking to join support groups, I recommend joining a few so that you can kind of see the differences between them and see which one is maybe more information driven, more positivity driven, because you don't want to participate in something that's just going to lay you low. Right. You got to keep positive energy up to keep you moving forward, because it is very much a battle. You know, we're called Lyme warriors for a reason.
Right.
This is a battle. We're battling the disease. We're also, not as well supported as other diseases. And so that becomes part of the battle as well. And so that's kind of my big advice to anybody who's looking to try that is try to stay with the positive folks.
I absolutely agree. And you can, especially when you're new, you can get very overwhelmed by belonging to too many of them as well. But it is a good idea, like you said, to go ahead and start with, maybe checking them all out and see which one fits for you. And then maybe narrow it down to just a couple of them that you are regularly in to get the great advice that they offer. So.
Yes, that's how I did it as well. I did stop following a few that, maybe just didn't have enough information, kind of available through the members, because that was as much as wanting to know that I wasn't alone. I was also looking for information. I'm like, hey, what worked for you? Because I kind of did my own statistics on that as well. I wanted to see of the people who were in remission, what worked for them.
Right.
And also compare that to my budget, because that was the other thing. Some of the things like ozone therapy, I didn't try because it just seemed so expensive. Whereas, the herbs are like, well, I can go on Amazon and I can figure out which brands are okay. And, which ones are like, maybe stay away from that and, kind of stay within my budget. So that's always something we have to consider since.
Absolutely. So, it's very, and I tell people all the time that when I went through my journey, unfortunately I spent a ton of money. But that was also several years ago, and things have changed so much. There's so many more things that are working for Lyme that it doesn't have to be this huge financial burden for you. So I'm so grateful that you came up with this protocol that you can share with people that may help them battle. Yeah.
I hope so. And if not the whole thing, maybe parts. It's okay to pick and choose what's right for you. And
they can create their own from your list. Exactly.
Add things in for, if they have Bartonella or one of the other co-infections, make sure that they're hitting all of their bases. As someone with a background in education, I'm all about learning. I'm not like, this is the way. Like, no, there's lots of ways.
Yeah.
Find what works for you. Go ahead and try a few things. And if you just keep moving forward, you'll get it. You'll figure it out. If you can afford to go to a Lyme literate doctor, do it. They're full of information. And like the one I see, he doesn't specialize in the herbs, but he's very, very supportive of whatever I'm doing. If it's working, he's all for it. He's just happy to see his patients getting better. And he helps me with endocrine support. My hormones were a mess. The first time around, they weren't too bad. My thyroid was messed up. But the second time around, I was in perimenopause, which is not normal for my family in the 30s. It's usually later. So I think it was probably the Lyme. And definitely it's helped get my energy up, get my strength back to where I'm able to ride 20 miles again, which is incredible. It feels so good to get out there and be you again. And that's kind of where we all want to get to. We all want to get to that place where like, oh, I'm me again. I've got this.
We all have the same end goal in mind. It's just sometimes, well, a lot of times it's, you know, different regimens that work for different people, but the end result is we want everybody to be healthy and rid of Lyme. So, yeah.
Yes.
Well, gosh, yeah. I can't thank you enough, Christine, for sharing your story with us and your protocol. And good for you for putting that together, piecing it together after all those years. I guess you had a lot of time to figure it out.
Yeah, this was great. And that's what's so... I mean, these are protocol based upon 26 years of wisdom. So it's
yeah, a lot of error.
Well, I mean, and this is it, you know, it's that we want people to not have to do the errors. So if they can connect with somebody that has done them already, then let's just go to the gravy.
Yep.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what I did. I figured out my protocol based on others who shared their information freely, and all I did was just match up me to what they were doing.
Yep.
What would fit me that they're doing, and it worked. And I think that's something that's repeatable for all of us. And we are in kind of an exciting age of information. We're also at an exciting time for Lyme, where a lot of breakthrough research, where we're like, oh, wow, in the lab, we can see the antibiotics can't kill all of the spirochetes. That's big. That's a huge breakthrough. We got to get the information to the right people now.
Right.
Exactly.
Because now we're like, now it makes sense. Now we know why it comes back. And now we know we have to approach it differently until maybe one day there will be a pharmaceutical solution that'll just get rid of it in a few weeks, and that'll be great. Right. But until we get there,
in the meantime,
yes, and they work. So,
and the thing with herbs are that they are complex enough, and they have evolved over, you know, obviously thousands and thousands and thousands of years, while being exposed to these different pathogens that have existed. So it is hard for the pathogens to adapt to them because of their complexity.
Exactly. And I am a person of faith, and having kind of dived into this form of medicine, this ancient form of medicine, it's like, wow, it's like everything we would need. Because, you know, when you research, you stumble on more than just your illness. You stumble on so many cures that are just growing in the natural world. And it's sort of amazing. And as a person of faith, reassuring that all the tools are out there if we just use them. And I kind of know there's some financial part to why we walked away 100 years ago from natural medicine. But I think in a lot of ways, trying to reinvent the wheel with pharmaceuticals was a mistake, because I've been on pharmaceuticals. I've gotten the side effects. I got off of them for good reason. And the herbs, now you got to get on the right herbs. Some, you know, can cause side effects or have interactions, but for the most part, it's like eating good food. Right. It just agrees, because it's built like me. There's a symbiosis. A synergy.
Yeah. They give intelligence to the body as you're taking them. Yeah. Well, thank you so much. This was awesome. This was really awesome. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Christine. We really appreciate you joining us.
Thank you.
My pleasure. Take care, guys.
Information this podcast is for educational purposes only and is not designed to diagnose or treat any disease. I hope this podcast impacted you as it did me. Please subscribe so that you can be notified when new episodes are released. There are some excellent shows coming up that you do not want to miss. If you're enjoying these podcasts, please take a moment to write a review, and please don't keep this information to yourself. Share them with your family and friends. You never know what piece of information that will transform their lives. For past episodes and powerful information on how to conquer Lyme, go to integrativelymesolutions.com and an additional powerful resource, limestream.com. For Lyme support and group discussions, join Tanya on Facebook at Lyme Conquerors Mentoring Lyme Warriors. If you'd like to know more about the cutting-edge integrative Lyme therapies my center offers, please visit thecarlfeldcenter.com. Thank you for spending this time with us, and I hope to see you at our next episode of Integrative Lyme Solutions with Dr. Carlfeld.